Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Challenge of Asian Wrap-Up Podcast for episode 12. I am Brian Cohn. Joining me this week is the great, known from basically every show possible on Robin's Podcast, it's Mike Bloom.
So happy to be here, Brian. I feel like I could climb into a burning building and save five children, just like Ashley after she got a pep talk from CT during her time of need.
Getting a pep talk from CT has got to be like one of the best pep talks you can possibly get from anyone ever.
I mean, you would think that, but let's remember that CT tried to give a pep talk to Shane a couple of episodes ago and he had nothing to do with it. So really, he was sort of looking a gift horse in the mouth in that regard.
That's true. That's true. And when CT is calling someone else a little crazy, then I think that enough should be like, all right, let me look in the mirror and let me reevaluate my life.
Yes, it's its own level of crazy, though. Of course, you know, Ashley would probably get in a fight with her own reflection in the mirror if it meant more camera time for herself.
Of course, it's someone looking at her. It's probably someone talking behind her back. How does she know what she what the mirror person does when she leaves the room?
Yeah. It's even more egregious. Not even behind her back. It's right in front of her face. The audacity to do that. That's ridiculous.
Of course. Ashley's like one of those people from like a weird horror movie. She could be like the star of that show Split. That movie Split, where she just has like so many different personalities. At any given moment, you never know what Ashley you're going to get.
I could definitely see her in one of those, like, while you were sleeping, single white female type of situations where, and let me just say right off the top here, I love Ashley as a TV character. She's definitely one of those TV characters that is a lot of fun to watch from an entertainment perspective, but is probably someone that you do not want to spend a single second of time with actually in person, because it just proves how crazy she's able to drive people, as is indicative in this episode. But she totally seems like the type of person that would, you know, get a roommate or get a boyfriend, proceed to like seep into every element of that individual's life, eventually taking it over and then snap at a moment's notice when they get crossed.
Absolutely. She's MTV casting gold and everyone else's nightmare, which is exactly what MTV is going for. So so we haven't talked. You actually obviously haven't been on this season. So before we dive into whatever the hell happened this weekend, obviously we'll touch on everything else that's going to happen future for the challenge. What are your thoughts on this season, this format, the cast, anything you want to dive into?
Yeah, it's just like we're doing our own little ceremony. We're saying goodbye to the past and sending the proverbial podcast boat off to the future. So let's go through the pros and cons of the season, because I think obviously with every season, there comes both sides of it. In the pro side, and I'm not just talking pros versus champs, which I'm sure we also are going to talk about at some point. So in the pro side, I think the cast this season is a big plus. I'm a big fan of this cast, considering that I think we got out a lot of the chaff and maybe more either boring personalities or weaker athletes earlier on in that first little bit of the game. So that this group that we were left with when the champs entered, for the most part, they were either big athletes, big characters, maybe even a little bit of both in some case. But it felt like each person really brought something to the table in some way, shape or form. And there was a fun mixture of old school personas, new school personas, everything in between. I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, how much we love seeing people like Darrell and CT return to the show, and even someone like Shane. That was such a welcome return as someone who watched the challenge back in the day. And I'm talking back in the day, like OG Gauntlet and Battle of the Sexes. Right. To see them back was super cool. I love the first few episodes too, actually. Before the champs actually invaded, the eponymous invasion of the champs, they did a really interesting job in that premiere of really fleshing out an individual story for each one of the underdogs. And especially starting it as an individual game, there might be quibbles you can pick here or there. Like, you know, maybe it wasn't a great idea to have, if you come first in a challenge, then you're safe for the rest. So then, you know, just you have Nicole and Dario standing by the wayside making commentary for two episodes. But there was something so interesting about just investing so much time in these people about where they're coming from. I mean, I had no idea about like Amanda's dad situation or where Nelson came from or anything like that, or, you know, Hunter's aspirations with what he's going to do with the money. I don't know how that carried over into TJ's, you know, pageant-esque questioning of what are you fighting for later on, but that's besides the point. But I really like those first few episodes because it really allowed us to get to know these people. And as someone who personally has not really watched The Real World the past few seasons, I've gotten into Are You the One recently, but
made the right decision there.
I went home instead of going big. To quote what I hear is a horrible season. Even though Kayla came out of it and she was a lot of fun. But I think that in those first few episodes, we were really able to get to know these people as reality TV characters. And as somebody who might not have known a lot about these people or are trying to experience them solely through the challenge, I thought that was great. let's move over to the cons. I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse here. The format was, it was tough. Good on the challenge. Good on MTV for trying something different. You and Ali have been really beating the drum of get rid of these two-person teams. And I'm glad that they finally did that. I'm glad that we went back to the team format, even though admittedly, I understand where they're coming from with the imbalance of underdogs versus champions, but still, that first competition was a 6-on-4 slaughter. You could kind of tell that things were going to be a little uphill for the champions. I don't know if I like the alternating back and forth, too. It felt like there were some lost stakes there where I even brought this up in feedback from one of those podcasts when it was the like hang from a rope challenge. The Shane was able to do that badass thing where he tackles all the champion guys in one fell swoop. Because he had no stakes, because he said, OK, I'm working for the team. You know, this isn't for my individual safety. I thought that was a great TV moment, but you feel like the momentum is almost thrown off when you're having every other team go. And as much fun as, you know, it was to see Zach, Bananas, CT and Darrell all compete in eliminations, I felt like we were robbed a little bit with the team so small. I mean, I'll be honest here. Bananas was sort of like, I don't know, like beta Bananas this season, where what he does best is strategy and politicking. But because of the team size and the way the competitions were formatted, he really couldn't do that. And especially after he's had such a presence ever since free agents, to have him sort of take a back seat was strange. I would have wondered what it would have been like had they gone with, you know, more of a ruins format of, OK, we'll send in one underdog, one champion every week, and whoever stays goes back to their team. And it might have changed things a little bit. Who knows if we would have had the configuration that we did. And obviously another big thing that stuck in my craw is the editing, though I think we just kind of have to settle in at this point that under this new showrunner, who I think came on from like last season forward, it's going to be edited like a reality show, not necessarily a reality competition show. I feel like this season has been really edited more like the real world, where they're building in cliffhangers, whether that be in the middle of a challenge or before a challenge or not even getting remotely to a challenge. They want to create as much drama as possible and really pumping out the situation. So I just think it's something that we're going to have to get used to, that the episodes are just going to be structurally different moving forward. And at the same time, and I'll end my dissertation season 29 of the challenge with this. I wonder, Brian, I'll throw a question out to you.
Sure.
With this new format of the challenge being edited, do you feel like the challenge is a show now that's better on a binge watch, watching all the episodes all at once rather than having to wait a week in between to say, oh, I wonder how CT and Darrell are going to do?
You know, it's interesting because I haven't binge watched a new season of the challenge in a while. And since I started watching, I've never really binge watched. I've only gone back and watched old ones doing it. And I have actually enjoyed it more because it's a type of show where, you know, you don't really need the week-to-week discussion, as I talk about this on a podcast which has week-to-week discussion.
You're sort of putting yourself out of a job there.
But it's not like, you know, like a show like a Lost or like a Breaking Bad, where you like to dive into each episode and think about different things that might happen. Where the challenge, you just like to sit back, shut off your brain, and just enjoy. And if you can just do that for like 6, 7, 8 straight hours of this, it might actually be more enjoyable than doing the weirdly time to be continued and trying to pick up on different threads. So I do think actually watching this, maybe not even as complete binge watch, but if you do like 4 episodes at a time and then 4 episodes at a time and then 4 episodes at a time, that almost might be the best way to consume the show. I don't know how you could ever pull something like that off. You'd have to be really psychotic just to watch. All right, today's the first of the month. Time to catch up on my challenge for the month. But I think that actually might be the best way to consume this type of show. Really for all like MTV shows, like Are You the One and all this stuff.
Well, the thing that I'll put like Are You the One over this other show, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of MTV shows, I'm assuming, over the course of this podcast, because spoiler alert, not a lot happened in terms of action in this episode of the challenge. But I feel like at least Are You the One follows a set structure every episode, right? You know, there's going to be a challenge, there's going to be a truth booth, there's going to be a matchup ceremony. That happens every single episode, whereas the challenge has sort of lost that reliability. I mean, maybe we should advise the listeners right now, hey, don't watch the next 2 episodes live. Wait 2 weeks until the entire finale trilogy is done and just watch them all at once. I feel like that might be a more enjoyable experience overall, because next week is going to be an hour of them struggling through maybe the first 1, maybe 2 days of this excruciating final, but we're not going to get any sort of end result from it.
Right. Now, that's it's a great point. I was going to mention this at the end, but just in case everyone's wondering, there won't be a podcast next week. I was talking this to Mike off air, but because of the way they're doing this final structure, I kind of had the same thought where just make this like I'm making this like a 2-hour movie. You're just going to watch do the finale all in one shot in 2 weeks rather than discussing who whatever cliffhanger of someone dying at the end of next week. So that's going to be our plan. I think that let's make that everyone's plan. Let's have MTV Challenge Race be zero. Yeah,
everyone
next week,
and take everyone a break. Look at it. Look, it's 2017 has started off to be an eventful year so far. I think everyone just deserves a week sometimes to sort of take pause, take stock of your life, and then be sure to say, okay, the challenge will be back next time. And that's guess what? That's 2 hours of the challenge you get to watch. What a joy.
Exactly. And another thing you mentioned about like the edit, which actually kind of like ties into the start of this episode, the way they edited the elimination. They added like super sad a lot throughout this entire episode. They had a lot of like super sad music.
Oh yeah, I was taking note. Reasons. It was specifically Kaleo's "Way Down We Go" as Darrell's slow descent into elimination.
Yeah, it was as if Darrell was like dying. The way they were edited is like this like old veteran is about to be took out the pasture and like put down. The way they were like put this elimination together, it was very bizarre. What did you make of how they put the elimination edit together?
Yeah, that was very strange because Not So Fast, I actually really like Not So Fast as a final elimination because I know people are calling for Hall Brawl because those are like what makes some big challenge moments are these big physical encounters. But Not So Fast kind of combines the physical, you know, I believe when it first premiered in Battle of the Seasons 2012, I think it was like the quote unquote strategic choice for an elimination challenge in that, you know, it combines the physical elements with this heavy as hell rope, especially doing it by yourself. You know, there are some mental games in there as well in terms of figuring out what's the best way to wrap it around, strategy and all that stuff. So I enjoy it as sort of like a nice culmination of this is what you need to do in order to do well in a final. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure why this felt like it needed to be dragged out just because it didn't seem close. Again, this is sort of like what happened with the Bananas Darrell thing, which might be even more egregious considering that was paused in the middle of it.
Not even at the middle. It was paused like 5 seconds later. The elimination was over.
Yeah, that also is yet to be determined, though, because there's also the rumor that it was 10 rounds instead of 5. So it was strange to sort of tune and be like, all right, I'm ready to watch the challenge. And Darrell almost immediately falls apart. What I will say about this episode overall, because I don't want to be too overly negative of it, I don't think it was a good episode of the challenge, but I think it was a good episode of reality television, if that makes sense. I think there was so much emotion from a wide spectrum. We're covering all the characters from inside out over the course of this episode. But there wasn't actually a challenge. You know, there was one elimination challenge and we got literally 5 minutes of the 3-day final at the end of the episode. And that's it in terms of the actual challenge that's referred to in the title. Everything else was just a bunch of drama, which some people might say they don't watch the show for. But as someone who's a fan of reality television and good TV, there is a lot of stuff to talk about in here. So I'm happy in that regard.
Yeah, there was a lot of retrospective, both positive, weird, sad, kind of like emotional. And then there was some classic MTV drunk drama like that. That all was packed into this one. So really, I'd say the two quote unquote stars of this episode, I would say, are the Ashley stuff and everything that went down the way they portrayed it with CT and DM. So we can just focus on those two things if you want to just dive into that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, obviously with Ashley, you also have to incorporate like the Nicole and Nelson stuff as well. But yeah, I mean, CT for being so in the shadows this entire season. And again, I don't know if that's due to the format or just the editing style that he hasn't been partying. Obviously, he's just sort of been sitting in the background and doing hilarious gestures and confessionals. This was really his time to shine, though, because it was such an emotionally grounded scene. I mean, you were just sort of saying he was paying tribute. It almost reminded me of, I don't know if you remember, and I apologize in advance, I'm going to reference Survivor a couple times. I know some people don't necessarily like that, but I'll try not to do it as much as possible. But do you remember the Survivor Australia finale?
I'm not sure what.
So, you know how in Survivor they used to do this back in the day, they used to do these like rites of passage retrospectives. In Survivor Australia, there were only three people in the finale, so they really had to pad it out. And what they did was they painted like little carved totems representing their time in the game and really reflecting back on it. And I believe they would then throw those totems like over the waterfalls in which the camp was situated. That's what this sort of felt like, was like pontificate upon your experiences and then send this metaphoric ship out to sea to represent your way forward. And it turns out that, you know, I think everyone has some baggage in one way, shape, or form coming in. But it's very clear that CT has the most emotional heft on a relatability level because we've sort of tracked him. And allow me to be hyperbolic for one second here, Brian Cohen. I believe that Chris CT Tamborello, Mr. Tambourine Man himself, has one of the best character arcs, not only in reality TV, but in scripted and reality television history.
I'm right there with you. I think I said something very similar to that when he first came on, and now when he started, when we really started to see the morph to Dad CT of his transformation. I mean, it's got to be about 10 years, give or take a couple years, about his time on MTV. Like, his arc really is remarkable. But not even just like his stuff on the show, but everything he's gone through off the show. A lot of people probably forget about his brother being like murdered. I don't know if it was in front of him, but like it at least happens. And just everything he's obviously gone through with Diem, and then everything with the show. There could easily be a documentary about the story of CT and just his place in like TV lore. Because it's true. Absolutely. Like, it's not a hyperbolic save, at least in my mind.
I know. It's almost like the reverse transition of Walter White in Breaking Bad. And that, like, he started off as, like, I mean, when they first did the Inferno 2, he was, like, the badass. He was considered, I think, one of the biggest challenge villains for quite some time when he was on Inferno, Inferno 2, Gauntlet 3. Because, you know, coming into his challenge career, Real World Paris, you know, he was an asshole, and he really continued to be, but he proved to be a strong presence in the game. And it really climaxed, even though he had some sweet moments with, you know, as you said, being with DM. There's that super sweet scene that I know they play a lot, but it really gets me every time. And it was on this episode too, where, you know, during the duel, DM is undergoing treatment and she's afraid to show people her hair underneath the wig. So CT sort of takes her aside and the camera's focusing on them from afar. We don't get the sound on their conversation, but she just pulls off the wig and shows him who she really is. And that's really all you need to see in terms of representation. But then it sort of climaxes in this whole like Inferno 3 duel two type of moment where, you know, he's headbutting Adam King and he's apparently hopped up on so much cocaine to kill an entire South American country. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he's in a torrid affair with Diem as well. And it's just clear that he's in an unwell place, even though he makes a brief comeback during Cutthroat to do one of the best challenge moments of all time. He makes a return during Rivals and Battle of the Exes, where it really does become the narrative of CT fighting his personal demons of him. First, he's partnered up with the guy that he tried to literally kill the first night in the duel too. And it's true that, and I think, you know, like you said, during that time, he also underwent this really unfortunate tragedy of having his brother murdered. And then also led to his separation with Diem, is because for one reason or another, Diem was focusing on her career, or she, you know, was not able to support him at that time. So he, you know, it seemed like he was showing a softer, more amicable side of himself. And I mean, his and Diem's story was the story of Battle of the Exes, in my opinion. It is still a travesty that they lost that final, because, you know, they really were the narrative going and are still one of the most famous challenge couples to date. Then, you know, it sort of dies down a little bit. He wins Rivals 2. He finally, after his like fifth finals appearance, he makes an appearance during Free Agents, but he's almost like just sort of like he is this season, just sort of chilling in the background. He almost makes it to the final, super under the radar, but then loses out right at the end. But his last appearance on the show was with Diem. And even though he sort of made that guest appearance during Bloodlines in honor of her, you have to imagine that something like that definitely sets you back emotionally. Mm-hmm. And then to have him come into this game as someone who not 10 years ago was threatening to bite people's faces off like he was on some sort of flaca, to come in bringing a life into this world and saying, you know, not only do I recognize the insanity that the show brings out on these people, but, you know, this kid helped me raise myself out of that pit. is something that I would never use this adjective to describe something about the challenge, but it is genuinely beautiful.
It's
just insane to see the transition that one person can make of really cleaning themselves up and turning themselves into a respectable person. Granted, there are a few peaks and valleys that you may be traipsing along that journey, but it's something that is unrivaled in terms of any other challenge history. You know, Johnny Bananas, he has 14, 15 notches in his belt at this point, but CT's belt is definitely the more well-known.
For sure. And I mean, we talk a lot about on Survivor with Winner's Edit, but as Pia Pia asks, is there any way at all CT can lose after this incredible tribute of an episode? So after all this buildup, after everything they show with CT and everything, is there any way he's not winning this season in your mind?
I hope so. But I mean, I want to listen to Pia because Pia is like the RHAP EDGIC edit expert. But I want to say yes, because, again, even though he's been in the background a lot, he's had a very solid edit, especially compared to people like Corey and Nelson, who have definitely had their moments in the sun. But I think CT glimmers much more in the sun than they do. But then again, I'm going to have to turn to that aforementioned Battle of the X's final, where I think him and DM had by far the biggest and most sympathetic story going in, and they were doing well. But Johnny and Camilla quite literally walked in their footsteps to pass them and win. Mm-hmm. So they've been known to do bait and switches before. The CT lover in my heart really hopes that's not the case, and that, you know, that basically CT is dealing with two layups, that one of them can't even swim against a current. So that's going to show how well they're going to do in this 3-day final. But I'm not going to count them out just yet, considering that we've seen it happen in the past.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's pretty hopefully certain that he wins. I mean, it can't be 100% certain because you just never know. I mean, obviously he's the fan favorite going, like, I don't think anyone, I think even like Corey and Nelson's families are probably rooting for CT at this point, but we'll have to see if anyone else can give him a run. So what about everything that happened with Ashley? And then obviously, like you mentioned, Nicole and Nelson stuff. So first with Ashley, we kind of saw that little bit like this last season when she thought, the other Nicole, Nani's cousin Nicole, was, I think, hooking up with Cuz, I think it was at the time, right? And it turns out nothing was even going on, and she just freaked out. Here, there was literally nothing going on. I don't think they were even talking about Ashley, and she just has a complete mental breakdown and wants to go home.
Yeah, so like you said, this sort of has connections to last season and even earlier on in this season with the whole Jenna Bruno Fingergate and the Mile High Club, where it seems like Ashley sort of has the tendency to, if not exaggerate details, outright fabricate them for the sake of television. And this is definitely an indicator. I mean, we got sort of inklings of it when she's in her room and she's sort of musing about how sad she is that her friends, Amanda, Shane, Sylvia, aren't there with her, and that makes her feel sad and that she's really not part of a team. Then we have this conversation between Nicole and Nelson, and Nicole's, you know, actually having her own emotional crisis because she just lost this girl who, granted, she was toying around with for a little bit, but I think she actually invested some genuine feelings in there once they actually settled down and Nelson's trying to support her. Ashley, for some strange reason, the switch flips in her head, believes that they're chit-chattering about her. She comes up with about three different excuses over the course of this conversation. And listen, I am by no means a Nelson stan. I think that he has grown on me a little bit over the season. When he came into the season, I was like, who the hell is this guy? This is not someone who we remembered at all as the purple contestant from Rivals 3. He was a little bit of a tryhard at first, but I have to give him all the kudos in the world for this conversation, because he hit the nail on the freaking head by going in and saying, like, okay, the reason why she's doing this is because she wants the camera on her. Now that the cameras are on you, what do you want? And she proved his words correct. She just stood there and was like, she didn't say anything. And so he said, yep, that's right. And I mean, then she had the audacity, could you believe it, Brian, to slap Nelson's hat off of his head, complete with that like shaky camera sound effect.
Yeah, at least she didn't put it in the fire. Then that would have been one step too far. But yeah, Randy Nupple was right with you. He said, was Nelson finally halfway bearable, calling out Ashley on camera time? I love when the challenge gets a little meta, where they talk about the fourth wall about camera time and doing this for show or for air. And I love when people get called out for that.
Yeah. And let's also remember, like, Ashley's chronology, not only with the challenge, but again, I didn't see her real world season, but from what I heard, she lasted what, like three episodes?
Yeah, and it was about three episodes.
And she basically like got kicked out because she was making a drunken scene every time and making really inflammatory statements and really trying to make, again, everything about her.
Yep. That's basically right. Ashley on the challenge.
At least she has the skills to back it up. She's been good in the challenges. I actually think, you know, we're probably going to compare the finalists later on. I do think she actually has a decent chance to win here. I think she's athletic enough. We obviously have not seen her really do a final in this capacity, and obviously she causes the drama. So, I mean, get used to seeing Smashley on your screens here, folks, because she is not going away, unlike her time in the real world, anytime soon.
No, I think she's a mainstay, for sure. I agree. Yeah. So what did you make of Nicole's breakdown? Because this was Nicole and Nelson were talking about when Ashley stormed in, but Nicole was basically breaking down, crying about how much she misses Laurel. She didn't think she would fall for someone, and she's just surprised by this. So what did you make of Nicole's emotional side here?
Yeah, so Nicole's a really interesting character, because going in, I was super pumped. I feel like not since, you know, Emily Schramm and Laurel have we really seen really jacked athletic females go into the challenge and just kick ass. And in terms of the challenges, she really has. I mean, she never, outside of the bloodbath, she never had to enter an elimination. Though again, that might be because of the format. I think the underdogs only did like what, two eliminations in the team format before they went into the bloodbath.
Yeah,
but
sounds about
she
right.
She was great in the physical regard, and I think that the Ashley relationship, or the Laurel relationship, I've had Ashley on the right now. She's actually gotten what she wanted. But the Laurel relationship is something that, again, we have not seen in the challenge for a little while. And talking a little bit about Laurel as well, I was so excited to see a different side of Laurel, because I think Laurel's reputation has sort of just been like, oh, she's the heartless physical beast. You know, she had that horrible moment where she made fun of Big Easy, but outside of that, she really has not done anything too emotional. You know, she broke her friendship with Cara Maria during Free Agents, but they seem to be copacetic now. But we got to see a vulnerable Laurel. A vulnerable, I guess, if that's the portmanteau I'll come up with. But yeah, she didn't. It's something that we really have not seen from her. Someone who said, I'm really afraid to open up and really be myself, and Nicole is helping me become myself. Now, does that mean I approve of what Nicole was doing? Absolutely not. I think no matter what your gender is, screwing around with somebody is not the most morally right thing to do. But at least it was more nouveau. I mean, the last time I think we saw this was, I don't know, you could talk about Anissa and Rachel hooking up back in the day, or, you know, Evelyn trying to pursue a romance with Brooke during Gauntlet 3 when Brooke wasn't even batting for that team.
The deep old days.
Yeah, so I'm happy that this was at least a new type of storyline that was brought into the challenge. And I think the challenge realized that as well, hence why they put all this relationship drama in. And I'm happy that they're doing fine now. But Nicole, I'll admit, I her voice is still taking some getting used to. I feel like in particular with her breakdown here, she did sound a little John Travolta. I think she said something, but she's like, man, I just can't. I really can't. Like, she went full Travolta there. So if she pulls out more of these John Travolta impressions when she gets emotional, I want her to go through relationship trouble every episode.
Yeah, I think for Nicole, this is just a clear example of when you're just stuck in this house for so long, at least with the real world, you're allowed to, you go out, you talk to other people, you do other things. The challenge, you're just stuck in this house doing the same thing with the same people over and over again. And this is just someone who's just getting stir crazy and found any little thing to like make her go nuts. And now she's just like bawling over. I mean, she's going to see Laurel in like 72 hours. It's not that big of a deal. But for her, it's like she's just trapped in this house. She just wants to get out of here. And then she's just like set her loose.
Yeah. And again, I don't know her from her real world season, but it seems like, if I may voice some implications onto Nicole, it seems like she is the type of person to fall fast and fall hard. So I could totally imagine her like really relying on Laurel as a support system, only for those cables that supports harness to essentially drop. And we'll be talking soon, I'm sure, in a spoiler section about someone who tried to do that on a real world, on a real challenge season once. But I feel like she threw herself emotionally into that relationship, albeit it was a little delayed. So I think those were genuine emotions. But like you said, I think it is a little bit of a pressure cooker situation, too. I mean, I feel like Nicole consistently runs hot, and this is just one side of that.
Yeah. And then from here, we get what may have been, up until we find out their reason for this, but one of the more useless scenes in challenge history, where they're on like a boat going to some rest and relaxation time. I really wrote in my notes, why is this even happening on my television right now? Because it's just felt like such an out of place waste of time. But it did lead to what was one of the more emotional moments the show has done, with talking about people's past. And that's how this leads us to the DM retrospective about everything that happened with her. So it did lead to like a quote unquote good place, but just another very weird moment in this season about just having them go off for some rest and relaxation on some magical island.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely sure about the trip to the, was it like the Raleigh beach for the rest and relaxation? Yeah. I mean, I guess they had to sort of supplement them traveling, right? Because the last time they didn't travel to another country, actually, I think was the last time they were in Thailand for Rivals 2. So maybe they just were like, okay, we're not sending them anywhere, so let's just give a really big bombastic celebration to say, hey, you made the finals. I mean, I don't know exactly how much they were able to take in. I did love them going to the restaurant and the clue being delivered. I'm trying to remember, Brian, do we really see clue readings these days on the T-Mobile sidekicks or whatever the phone may be a choice?
We get it occasionally, but a lot. I miss it. I love when they pretended that TJ was sending them texts or leaving them notes. It always a little spice to it. But yeah, that's not something that we've been getting that much this season, or at least in the past few seasons either.
I wonder if it's the sort of dearth of Evan and Kenny, who I feel like, especially during like the ruins days, made like big skits out of the clue mm-hmm. readings. Maybe they just thought that no one could one up them. But I did love them being out to dinner, and this poor waiter probably had to get told like, okay, you're gonna deliver them a cell phone on a silver platter sure. that's gonna have this really scripted message on it.
Yeah, so this is where we get the retrospective. So before, I mean, we talked about DM a little bit before, we can get into it more now, but what did you, any other past histories stand out to you? Nelson being a thug stand out to you? Anyone else's story kind of resonated at all?
It is interesting that Ashley's saying like a lot of my insecurities were revealed, and she's like, I want to let go of being judged by other people. Again, like we said, we'll see how much she changes. The one thing, as much as I love Ashley as a TV character, the one thing I really wish she changes, girl, you got to stop being Flo from Amazing Race. Stop saying you're going to quit every damn time you want to throw a fit, because that's definitely the boy who cried wolf. But eventually the producers will just get tired of your BS and will walk away.
Yeah, I think new rule for the challenge going forward they need to implement is like a quitting threshold. You should get two threats of quits a season. You can have one tantrum where you go nuts and threat to quit, and that's fine. If you threaten to quit again, you should just be out. You're just done. No more of this. She does this all the time when she gets drunk and sad. She always threatens to quit. You should get one freebie a season, and then otherwise you're gone.
I think that they should institute like a verbal contract. They should have a lawyer on site and say like, okay, you said you were going to quit. That means you quit now. Bye-bye. It means, your words have weight to them. So I'm hoping that Smashley still brings all of the bat poo insane drama that she's brought to her previous two seasons of the challenge. Just let's leave behind in that lantern boat this idea that every time something doesn't go my way, or every time I just want a little bit more camera time, to threaten that I'm going to leave the house.
Yeah, because threatening to quit on the eve of the finale is like one of the most absurd things you could possibly do. It's not day three here. Like you're done. It's over. You're at the final.
Yeah, again, that's what Flo from The Amazing Race did, and I won't spoil the outcome there. But yeah, she threatened to quit the leg before the final. So again, it's a pressure cooker situation when you're on a reality television show. But I think Ashley, unlike Flo, might have been doing it for, some more exposure time. Every minute she's on camera is another dollar added to the amount that she needs to be paid in order to appear at some club.
So Kevin Gilruth asks, we discussed it, but he asks in full, how do you think MTV handled the acknowledgement of the passing of Diem? So overall, how do you think they did?
I think it was extremely tasteful. And look, I can understand if people might think it's emotionally cloying, or that it's repetitive, especially on a show like The Challenge, which really, again, does not deal with this stuff. But Diem's story is extremely powerful. The fact that she was undergoing cancer therapy twice over the course of her tenure on the series and was still on, to the point of where she was on Battle of the Exes 2, had to get removed from the game, and then passed away, what, like only a few months later? Mm-hmm. She is a part of the tapestry of the show. And, you know, just like they mentioned Knight, Zach dropped a Knight reference. Who would have thought that would have happened?
Right.
Back when he was asking, what are you playing for? I think the challenge, while it might be known for some more lurid things, especially in the reality TV spectrum, I think they do pay respect to those that have played the game, especially those that have become such an important part of the game, like Diem. So yes, we got something similar during Bloodlines. You know, we got Johnny talking about her cancer foundation a bit earlier on in the season, but CT has such a powerful connection with Diem that, and especially because it happened to fall on the anniversary of her passing, that, I mean, it had to be shown. Mm-hmm. It just had to be.
Yeah, and I think what MTV does a really good job recognizing is what makes the challenge so different than every other reality show is the other reality competition shows, I guess, because other shows kind of like this, but where the same people come back year after year after year, and you see them grow and change and become part of like their lives. So to basically toss out any type of connection that people have had with people that they've had from 5, 10, 15 years ago would be such a mistake. So I love that they are really good at showing past clips, and not even just like with the DM, but with any type of history comes up, they're really good about bringing back the history of what is happening in the moment. So I hope they never stray away from that, because I think that's one of the things they do really, really, really well.
And what I'm hoping is that, you know, as these new kids, your Jennas, your Corys, your Ashleys, maybe even now your Nelsons and Amandas after this season, as they become more and more recurring cast members on the show, I do hope that the show sometimes checks in with those emotional aspects, because personally speaking, I was able to invest a lot more in these people when, as I mentioned before, in those first few episodes, we got to know a little bit more about them as people rather as competitors of, you know, who exactly are you playing for? Where are you coming from? What are you planning to do? That allows me, as someone who doesn't really watch their source material, to invest more emotionally in them. And like mm-hmm. you said, if they come back on a recurring basis, they essentially become almost akin to like being on something like Keeping with the Kardashians,
right,
or you know, Vanderpump Rules, where there's a Real Housewives, where there's a cast that seems to come back every season and we check in on their lives.
Yeah. So I think what they did in the first few weeks in this season proved to that about how important that is. Like you mentioned, like they gave these new people a chance to shine and focus on them. And I think going forward, that'll be something you can look back on. Like, oh yeah, I did kind of start to either like or become a part of like Ashley and, you know, Amanda's and all these people, like they really become focal points for me. So I think MTV does a good job with that.
I could totally see in a few years if Ashley keeps doing this for some time, she's going to hit like a wall or a breaking point like CT did, whether it's a life event or otherwise. And then she completely comes back like a sobering personality. I don't know if that will mean anything on the same level in terms of entertainment, but mm-hmm. CT again sort of does this counseling to Ashley after her breakdown of like, you know, they're picking on you because you're strong. I don't know why he's exactly stoking that fire in that burning building that she's apparently strong enough to save people in. But, you know, like sees like here. And so I could see a similar trajectory to Ashley if we keep checking back in with her life every season.
Mama Ashley will be a sight to see. And then she'll get to make fun of someone else.
I don't know if I want to go that far. I don't know if I want Ashley to, at this point in her life, to bring a child into the world and be responsible for a little one.
So after 12, 13 episodes of all this entire season, we finally understand exactly what the final is and who gets paid and how it's going to be run and what's going to happen. So it took us this long, but here we go. So it's back to an individual type format, kind of similar to free agents, where in different legs, you're going to be paired with different people. And then the final leg, you're going to be by yourself. Third place gets $5,000. Second place, $15,000. And first, $100,000. And then if you finish, you also get the split, the amount of money you have left. So of the team pot. So the challenge, the underdogs had 85,000 and the champs had 25,000.
Yeah. So what did you feel overall about breaking back into individuals? Because I can see the criticism that people say it's confusing that we started as individuals, went back into teams and broke apart. It's almost like what happened in Bloodlines. And it also begs the question of, you know, wouldn't it have been nice? I know it's results oriented, but if we had allowed Laurel and Darrell have an 8-person final like Fresh Meat 2 and just have like the fourth place people either receive nothing or just their share of the pot, do you think that would have been a cool opportunity to have more people in there of characters that we liked?
Yeah, I think that I think it would be bad. I like the idea of having less champions in here, but I wish if they were doing that, then it almost would have made sense if they were just kept the team separate, because then it's really like, all right, Underdogs, here's now your chance to beat the champs. Instead, it's now like, all right, here's Underdogs. Here's your chance to see if you pair with people at the best possible time to do the best possible activity so you can beat each other. So it's kind of still classic MTV fashion, kind of like a half measure of what they've been trying to do all season with this champs versus Underdogs type thing, where, you know, you're kind of seeing if you can beat the champs, but you're also partnering with the champs in some of these aspects. So it's kind of a weird dynamic to kind of go for.
I know, we keep going back to this adage that TJ said of like, if you want to be the champ, you got to beat the champs. And they really didn't need to beat the champs except to get the $85,000 play money in their bank accounts. And now they need to beat the champs. But like you said, they also need to pair up with the champs during certain legs. So I feel like that whole phrasing just does not apply to this season whatsoever.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not surprising. I feel like this was kind of what they were building towards all time. This is about not just strictly doing as teams, because it's classic MTV. So, I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep over how they're doing this final. It's not exactly how I would have wanted them to do it, because I would have, if they were going to, like you said, if they were going to split it and do individual, maybe just have like the last elimination be a champ, like everyone in it, and you just have to earn your place in the final. Maybe do something like that. It's just weird
instead of the Underdog bloodbath, they just did like the everyone bloodbath, where maybe you could tweak it to have like the person who finishes first in the Sudoodoo puzzle goes through, the person who finishes first in the bungee elimination goes through, because then I think you would have a more of an even playing field. I know TJ said like you're all the strongest and the smartest, and I don't know if that's necessarily the case depending on some of these finalists, but if you threw them all in there together for one final mishmash, that could be a really interesting way to sort of advocate for survival of the fittest. Because I mean, we talked in the beginning about how Durrell versus Seed, he was kind of a letdown, but man, I would have loved to see the two of them go against each other, or to have Laurel still make the final in every one of her seasons and now have to go up individually against her girl toy. Mm-hmm. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they started with the Oasis. You got to win your way in it. What it could have been like fitting if you ended the same way, about having just earned your way to the final, but that's a little too much for MTV to put together.
Yeah, so that being said, I mean, I'm happy that it wasn't a paired. It's a paired final, but it's a rotating paired final. Like you said, like free agents, who knows if anyone's going to pull a Zach and almost drown or scream at his partner about how he's going to die on top of a mountain. Mm-hmm. I guess that's probably going to be Nelson, actually. Nelson's the most likely person to do that, depending on how he started off with his swimming. But this at least allows an opportunity for people to shine individually, which I feel like in the team stages, they really have not been able to do, especially with the format.
Yeah, and we'll get to see who's good with working with pairs in this type of situation, who yells at them, who berates them, again, who pulls a Zach and tries to like just shove someone across a mountain. So we'll have to see how that breaks down. Randy Nupple also asks, what are the power rankings of which guy and which girl are expected to win? So how do you rank the three men and three women in this final?
All right, so the men is easy. We sort of talked about it before. I feel like CT is number one with a bullet. If the first competition is any indicator, there's going to be some puzzles involved, and CT has shown that he's at least adept at puzzles, and I think the other two guys have shown that that is definitely not their strong suit. I think Corey is number two. As much as people may poo-poo the Bloodlines final as the easiest out of the bunch, I think Corey does have some experience there, and I think he has a little bit more of a head about himself. And Nelson, as much as I've grown to sympathize with him with his encounter with Ashley this episode, dude does not have a snowball's chance in hell of taking home anything besides the $5,000, in my opinion. He has not shown himself to really be amazing at anything in particular. He seems like an all-around okay competitor, with the exception of maybe the mental portion. So I'm not feeling that Nelson's going to do any better than bronze here.
Yeah, I'm with you. CT is a clear number one with a sizable gap number two, who I would also put Corey. I think, you know, having the experience of having run a final in the past is pretty important. I think just proving you've already proved to yourself you can get through, you can do whatever they throw at you. And I agree. I think Nelson is closer to Corey than Corey is to CT, but there is still enough of a gap where it's pretty clearly CT, Corey, Nelson.
But the women are a little bit harder. Now, I do want to say that Camilla has impressed me this season. I think what has sort of marred her reputation for me is that she did win Battle of the Exes, and she had a really strong showing in Cutthroat as well, which I think was her first season outside of that spring break hoo-ha right. wackadoo nonsense. But, you know, in that time since, she's been mainly known for, like, flaming out. You know, she lost, I pretty memorably, to Teresa, I think, in Free Agents. And, you know, Rivals 2, she did make it to the finals. She did support Jemmy, but I think people sort of forget about that, considering that Camilla was supposed to basically, like, single-handedly drag a woman who was afraid of ketchup to the end game, right. I think, and is definitely saying something. Yeah.
And they didn't even get to do the full final. That was where, like, whoever was last after, like, the first 10 minutes was just cut. So yeah. That was them.
But then, you know, both Bloodlines and Rivals 3, due to various circumstances, especially in Rivals 3, they both sort of went out mid-game. So I feel like it's been a while since we've seen Camilla really dominate. And I think she's proved herself more adept than I would initially think. Especially, you know, she was great or greater than Laurel in Not So Fast. She knew not to wear yourself out like she did in the first leg. And she was smart, though she almost hung herself in that aforementioned rope challenge. I don't know. I don't remember if she's good at puzzles, but then again, Nicole is worse. It's tough because Nicole is so good at the physical element, but she has such a big Achilles heel that I wonder if that's going to offset it. These rankings are super hard. I'm going to give the edge to Camilla because she's the only one that's been in finals. And she's been, in my opinion, I don't know what this 3-day final is going to look like, but in my opinion, the original Battle of the Exes final is the toughest final ever, considering that they had to do it in a really cold climate, and they did, like, the polar bear plunge, and they had to basically hike up an entire mountain while collecting artifacts along the way. And the fact that she was able to do that and win is saying something. So I'm going to put Camilla number one by a hair, by a power braid.
Mm-hmm.
This might be controversial.
I don't think you can. I think with these three, it's so interchangeable. I don't know if you can be really controversial.
I might put Smashley 2 and Nicole 3, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Nicole is such a strong player for weeks 1 through the episode before the finale. But I think she has fatal flaws that in a final really are going to kill her when she's not, you know, if she doesn't have a good partner to pick her up. So it's all going to depend on who Nicole's partners with in certain things. Because I think overall, I think Camilla, you just have to give Camilla the edge with her experience and how much, like you said, powering through the Battle of the Exes final and then just doing it. I think she has to be number one. And then I would put Ashley 2 and Nicole 3 as well. Because I think Ashley's overall game fits a final pretty well. I mean, she did that puzzle at Sududu pretty well. So I think that kind of gives her an edge. So I think I would, I'm with you with Ashley 2, Nicole 3.
Yeah, and again, those are all interchangeable, as you said, because Nicole could definitely make up for the fact that she probably doesn't do well on the mental elements. Though, again, that means she's not going to really do well on this first part of the leg between her and Nelson's poor swimming and her lack of puzzle skills. She might put herself in a hole from the beginning. But if the rest of it is on land, she could absolutely power through and dominate to at least end up in contention. But it's tough because you're weighing someone who has such big attributes and such small attributes versus someone who, again, is sort of like all around pretty good. You sort of have to give it to that person that's pretty good all around, since in any sort of roll of the dice situation, they're on par to do better than someone who's really good at some things and not good at other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. It is. I don't remember the last time really all I could see any of the three women winning. And I don't really remember that from a previous season of it really being that much of a toss up between everyone in a final. Contrast to the men. So,
yeah, well, and that's almost I'm trying to think. Because, yeah, even like Free Agents, you know, Johnny Riley was a little bit of a wild card. He never faced an elimination. Zach showed himself to be like a physical presence, but he clearly gassed out. I mean, I would say, I guess if we're going to like Rivals too, I mean, I feel like the main teams were fairly balanced. You had Wes and CT, you had Frank and Bananas, and then you had Marlon and Jordan, who were sort of like the Nicoles in a way. They were the freshman team that were able to actually do pretty well in the game. Again, the female side, Jemmy and Camilla were unfortunately out of contention, but even there, you had Emily and Paula versus Cara Maria and Cook, who are a surprisingly strong pair as well.
Right. So it's interesting. It's pretty interesting the fact that we're not, like, the men's side is going to be such like a snooze fest that it's really, they're just going to decide the women's side based on who does well with who and in what spot. So that's going to be the fascinating part. to see play out.
Over the course of two episodes.
Two episodes, yep. So we had the Nelson cliffhanger of him drowning this week. We'll have to find out who gets the cliffhanger of who is going to die next week.
And I have a feeling it's going to be Ashley doing something. Just a hunch.
Maybe she'll threaten to quit during the food portion again for like the fourth time.
You know she's going to do that, Brian. Yeah. You know she's going to be like, I can't do this. I can't. And I'm done. Throw me off this island. I'm done.
Yep. So the Ashley quit watch is back on. We can flip that calendar back down to zero for the amount of days since an Ashley quit. So we'll have to see how many hours it lasts in the final.
Well, you know, as TJ says, die young, saya young. We have to lose something in order to gain something. So we're losing our sanity to gain the idea of Ashley quitting in a final.
So Edward Morris asks, can we talk about next season? So, Mike, can we talk about next season?
Before we do, just one quick thing, because I feel like I didn't pay enough homage to CT during this initial elimination challenge with Durrell. I wouldn't say that he broke Not So Fast, but one of the problems that I've always had with Not So Fast, and actually when I was listening to you and Lita do that great podcast last week, I was thinking, like, if I was playing Not So Fast, what I would do is just not even worry about running rope through as many holes as I can. I just want to make a big knot. Again, to reference Survivor, try to do what James Miller from Survivor Palau did with the challenge that ended up sending him home, where you try to, instead of just making a bunch of slack, just make one big impenetrable knot that people can't get through. And CT was able to create both that and a reliable hammock, it seems, by the end. So I had to give him a lot of credit for actually going with that strategy and just focusing on making a giant knot, Miranese knot in the middle that Durrell just, one of the reasons why it was such a blowout is just Durrell could not figure it out heads from tails.
Yeah, the underrated CT mental game. All the overlooked.
Who knew?
Delivered it. Yeah, who knew?
All right, that being said, let's unpause. Let's talk about season 30, because the cast, at least from what we know, has been released. And, oh, man, yeah. It's a whopper.
So if no one wants to hear cast spoilers about this, or about the pros versus Joes, we may even talk about some Are You the One Second Chances also. So if you don't want to hear any of that, you can tune out now. Like I mentioned, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're not going to do a podcast for the part one of the finale. Part two will be done with Big Brother great Alex Kidwell. Big Brother coverage great Alex Kidwell.
So look forward to that. You can subscribe at robiswebsite.com/challenge iTunes and check back in 2 weeks. So for all those people, see you later. For everyone else, challenge season 30. Yes, so the cast was leaked on the great source of Venmo. Well, Vevmo. It's unbelievable how often I confuse Venmo and Vevmo to the point where when I'm saying it out loud, I'm still not 100% sure which is which. But
I mean, I feel like at this point, Vevmo, Pink Rose could ask for money via Venmo payments in order to leak these spoilers, because he, I'm not sure, has become the Redmond, if you will, from the Survivor world of spoiled information.
Yes. So it's as you mentioned, it's quite the doozy of a cast. It's a full 30 people, which has a lot of people wondering about the format. So let me just quickly read off the contestants. I have it off Challenge Wiki, so I'll do the male contestants first and then the female. So for the men, we have CT, Chris from Real World Go Big or Go Home making his first appearance, Corey back, Dario, Durrell, Derek from Are You the One Season 5, which is he's going to be overshadowed by the much more popular Derek from Road Rules coming back.
Not to disparage Derek from Are You the One too much, but I'm happy that Mr. Jesus Fish is back after he sort of unfortunately was harangued with the reputation of, spoiler alert for Are You the One Season 5, giving the strategy that ended up losing them the money in the end.
So Derek, it seemed like Derek and Durrell were kind of vying for this season of like the old school male coming back, and it seemed like Durrell kind of got it, but now they're both back for this season, so that's great. Devin is back. Hunter's coming back. Bananas is back. Jordan is back, which is very, very exciting. Wow. I thought he was done.
I guess that
acting career went south, so he needs to make another play, payday. Leroy is back. Nelson.
Roy Lee!
Shane, not this Shane, but Tony's stepbrother, just regular brother. I don't even remember anymore, but brother who he fought with on the season is back. And Tony's back. So that is the male cast, which is quite action-packed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could break it down from here. I mean, what I will say about this cast is, since I really talked up the season 29 cast, and we'll talk about it with the females as well, I am really excited that a lot of the season 29 cast has moved into season 30, with the exception of, I do really wish that Shane Landrum was in there. I was so happy to see him back, and I feel like for an old school guy, he actually brought a surprising amount of drama that I think even MTV was surprised to see. But I mean, it makes sense why, even if CT wins, like, him and Darrell would be back. Remember that Darrell, for example, like, he came back for the Ruins loss and then came back the next season for Fresh Meat 2 and lost. So I think they definitely seem like the type of people that they're like, well, I mean, you know, I'll just do two in a row and then be out by then. So we have no idea how they'll be doing outside of that. I'm hoping that we do get some quality bananas. I know people might have had enough of him after the whole steal money from Sarah gate. But again, we didn't really see too much of him this season, so it's almost like we had a break. But
and this was kind of your banana season off. This was it. This is like the least bananas you're going to get.
Your bananas famine, if you will. But yeah, Jordan being back is super interesting because, again, last time he came back, he won. You know that means he has a chip on his shoulder. And I think Jordan with a chip on his shoulder is the most entertaining type of Jordan. So happy to see Leroy. Leroy is one of the most underrated humorous cast members of the modern era. I think Tony and Shane, I could probably deal a little bit without. I do feel like I'm happy that Tony's sobering up, but I feel like he almost lost the entertainment factor, unfortunately, from him sobering up. I blocked Bloodlines from the memory, Brian. You're going to have to remind me about what Shane exactly did. And Corey and Nelson, Dario makes sense. They're sort of becoming our mainstays. But oh my God, Derek Kaczynski. So excited. This is a guy that's been hungry to get back. When's the last time he was on? Cutthroat. Cutthroat was the last time he was on.
I think Cutthroat was his last appearance. Yeah, he's, when you look at the cast, his name is 100%. He's the one who's like, holy, well, him and there's a female that was also back that you're like, holy shit, Derek is back. That is awesome. Because we got, like I mentioned, we got teased with it. There were rumors that he was on this season and maybe was even an alternate or something to that degree. And it just, for whatever reason, just didn't make the cut. So the fact that he is back, and I think a lot of it has to do with they saw how well Darrell did. And I guess they're just going out now, so they could have seen how well Darrell was received coming back by everyone, that they're like, okay, we can feel comfortable about bringing someone from Darrell's time and bring back Derek. And I mean, I don't know how anyone can not be excited about that.
Yeah. And I mean, again, like he definitely is one of the biggest challenge contestants with the most heart. I mean, you have to remember, I think it was Gauntlet 2 when they had that weird captain system where essentially if you were the captain of a team and your team lost, you automatically had to go into the gauntlet against someone. And I think Derek ended up defeating someone in the first round, ended up becoming captain. And I think he did something like five gauntlets in order to, he lost right out at the end to Timmy. But he shows so much heart and so much strength, surprisingly, for a little guy. I'm happy he was able to finally get, I think he won, what did he win? Inferno 3, The Island, and The Ruin. So he's finally bringing home money for his wife and his family. He also has the Darrell story and the CT story now, I think, of, and the Tony story, I guess, too, of coming back and competing for a family. But I've always been a huge Derek fan. And I'm also really excited to see Devin as well, which I didn't expect to say. I as you said, Brian, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about Are You the One Second Chances, but Devin is incredible on Are You the One Second Chances. He is pure cartoon villainy, and I love every second of him on screen. Yeah.
You know, Devin on his Are You the One season was that cartoon villain, like the twirling of the mustache, just the perfect villain, love to hate guy. And then on the challenge, he did kind of get swallowed up with a lot of the big personalities. He saw hints of him trying to pop out, but it was just, he just wasn't in the best of circumstances to embrace the level of hate he could have had. And then when he went back to his Are You the One world, this season, he is far, far and away the most fun person on that show, besides my girl Shanley, who I just will always love, even though she hasn't been that entertaining on the season.
No, but I'd say the top three from Are You the One Second Chances are Devin, Tori, and Shanley, with maybe Rashida in there as well.
I was hoping that the fact that she was on that show, that Shanley could have made the crossover appearance to this season, but I'm happy with the person that they plucked from that show to be back on this. So, but we can get to the females in a bit. So yeah, I think seeing Derek back is great. And a lot of people hate on Are You the One, but I think it's really important that they brought back Nelson, Dario, Hunter, people that have made an impact and at least have the recency effect. They've been building Dario and Nelson now for a couple seasons. Dario in particular, I feel like this is now its fourth season, unbelievably.
Yeah, he's done four in a row at this point. He's done as many as You know, he's almost done as many, like, Darrell's doing like his seventh, and now Dario's done more than half the season that Darrell has at this point, which is crazy.
Wild. But I think it's very important that they didn't, you know, because a lot of people are thinking this could be an Are You the One versus like new school, old school, Real World type season. So the fact that they didn't bring back all, like, put all new Are You the One people, I think is very important that you brought back some people that have face recognition for viewers right now.
As someone who does not watch The Real World, tell me about this guy Christopher. Okay, I really have no idea who he is.
You know, there was one person on Go Big or Go Home besides a male, besides Kayla, who I thought would be good on this, and there was a guy, and I'm totally blanking on his name. I was like, oh, Dion and Kayla actually had like a, they hooked up at some point in the beginning, and they were, there was a whole thing, but he was so perfectly made for this show that the fact that they picked someone from that season, and it was this guy, Chris, who is, I mean, he's basically like the guy from New Orleans, who was the gay black guy from New Orleans. I can't remember his name. Preston. He's basically Preston 2.0. Like, that's what he's going to be on this show. So I don't understand. Like, Dion, he was such like a over-the-top character, especially on his season. Like, a lot of the storylines are based around him, that they wouldn't pick him was very, very odd.
That's super interesting, unless they're really, you know, padding the fodder by saying, like, here's an easy first boot. Though, again, I think Preston did have a surprise. I think every time he's been, almost every time he's been on, he's been able to make it at least to mid game. I mean, him and Knight were the last male team eliminated before the final in Rivals 2. I think that definitely says something. But he's, I feel like from what I've seen from him, he's not exactly impressing so far. But who knows? Do you think he has the capability to, I don't want to lump him in with Shane on purely a sexuality basis, but do you think he can sort of play the Shane-like game? And, you know, if it is more of an individual type of thing, get in with female team members to be able to help him along?
He kind of had like an abrasive type personality that he wasn't really that likable. Well, at least for the viewers, I don't think he was very likable. And I think he had some people on the show that he was likable with, but he's not, I don't see him being like a very fan-friendly or show-friendly person. So that's why it's just a very bizarre choice. Very bizarre.
Interesting. Well, I guess every season's got to have a first boot. So I think we've got a clear number one with a bullet here.
Yeah. So for the females, I think it's pretty strong also. So let me just go through it quickly. So we have Alicia from Are You the One Season 5. Amanda is back. Anissa is back. Ashley is back. Brittany from Are You the One Season 3 is making her first appearance. Camilla, Cara Maria, Jemmy, Jenna, Kayla, Latoya, Marie, Simone is back. Tori from Are You the One Season 4. And the star female making her return is Veronica.
When I was prepared to come onto this podcast, I was ready to say, like, you know what? Like, people might think that Amanda is crude and loud and ridiculous, but she is just a modern version of Miss Veronica Portillo. Because if you remember, Veronica back in her day was sort of like part of the Mean Girls squad. And now to have the both of them on one season is going to be super interesting. I always loved Veronica in her time on the challenge, even though I think her last appearance was probably like in the ruins when she was, her game was ruined that she went out in the middle or something. But my heart is just so light right now, Brian, with this idea of having Derek and Veronica both on a season of the challenge in this modern day.
I mean, I think, like I said with Darrell, I think the fact that he did so well and people loved seeing him back, I think it really opens the door now for whoever, like, from that era wants to come back. Like, if Evelyn wants to come back or something, like people that, if they want to come back, I think now the door is fully open where there is a place for them to return. And I think that Darrell really opened that door and blasted through it. And, you know, he didn't win, but as we met, he had a great showing. He's loved. So then he's Derek back, Veronica back. I think going forward now, I think there's going to be even more people who we want to see come back who are going to get their chance to come back.
So I guess running down some of these other people as well. I mean, as I've said, we got a handful of people from season 29 between your Amandas, your Ashleys, your Camillas, your Kaylas. I'm happy that we sort of gave other chances to Maria and Latoya, who Maria was a little disappointed by. For someone who was such a force in Battle of the Seasons 2012, for her to go out first was really sad to see. So hopefully she actually works out this time and does well. And I felt like Latoya was fun, too. I was a little saddened that she had to go out over Sylvia, even though that means that Nelson did not have someone to hook up with during his time once he made it to the Oasis. Tori, I am so excited about as well. We'll talk more about Ari the One Second Chances, but Tori has really let loose her absolutely insane persona on Ari the One Second Chances, and it is delightful to watch. And I hope that it just continues to feed the fire and she continues to be that source of personality. But seeing Jenna back again, even though now her finals record is tainted, Jemmy, I was a little surprised by, just because, I mean, I think she had sort of agreed that after Knight's passing out of Rivals 2, that she wouldn't return. I don't know exactly what encouraged her to go back, but hopefully there are no catch-up challenges that would detract her. I think Alicia is proving herself to be fun on Second Chances. I think she was drawing a lot of ire during Are You the One season 5 because of her, hey, you have a perk of Max, I'm still going to sleep with you no matter what, which is a little ooky. But I don't know if that necessarily translates into this season. And Brittany, I honestly can't remember, but I wonder if she is sort of in the Christopher spot, her or Alicia of the first boot.
Yeah, Alicia has really made herself a great villain on her 2 seasons, as being someone that you do kind of like to hate. She's no filter. She'll do whatever she wants. She'll get in the scrap with whoever you want. So I actually do think she could have a pretty solid impact, kind of along like the Amanda spectrum, where she'll just say and do whatever, and people are probably going to hate her, but that'll probably make for good conflict and good TV. For Brittany, she was like a more shy, quiet person at the beginning of her season, and then all of a sudden she just transforms like this like sexual monster. So
I remember that now. Yeah.
So we'll have to see which Brittany comes onto this season, but she has some possibilities. But like you said with Tori, for me, I wanted to either see Tori or Shanley get the bump to the challenge. And as much as I love Shanley, I'm totally fine with Tori, because I think she is so perfect for the show. I think she could be a real star.
And the other one that I've forgotten to talk about was Simone, who we haven't seen since Rivals 3. And even then, she didn't really do anything on it, considering that, her and Thomas left because Thomas had that family emergency, one of the many non-elimination episodes on Rivals 3. So I, from what I remember, she seems to be someone who almost like what we were hoisting upon Amanda in terms of reputation, someone who makes a lot of waves and causes a lot of fuss, but really does not have the goods to cash that check, if that makes sense. Like, I don't really remember has like that really good in the challenges. So again, depending on what the format is, she might be someone who's like a quick little little cherry bomb or popper that you throw at someone's feet, like flare up really quickly, but then burn out just as quick.
So, I mean, for me, I think this is a very, very strong cast. We'll have to see what the format is. It seems it would make sense. There are exactly 10 people from Are You the One? And I mean, we'll have to determine how they would determine like a new school, old school type real world breakdown. But I'm sure you can kind of like fudge the line to get it to fit 10 and 10. And if we're setting up a 3-team format, I am all for it, because they haven't had this since Cutthroat, which is oddly enough Derek's last season, so I guess he's only coming back for 3-team seasons. So I'm totally fine if that is the format they're going now, because I think it'll be very well received.
Yeah, and I think that they also might have just cosmetically brought in 30 people because it's season 30. I know that there's rampant speculation that's like, oh, it's the challenge XXX. That means that there's 3 teams, or it means that Vin Diesel's going to come in and host. I'm not entirely sure, but that's what I'm hoping, because I do feel like this season gave us a taste of what a team challenge would be like. And again, it's a nice breath of fresh air from the pairings that we've seen the past few seasons. So I at any rate, I hope it's a format that is consistent, something that we understand, and something that allows for the best TV possible, no matter what.
So right before this cast was leaked, there was a rumor floating around the interwebs that Victor Cruz, the New York Giants extra wide receiver, is going to be hosting this season. It turns out that is not true, but he is going to be hosting a challenge show, and that is what was also just announced. This was actually announced. This cast is technically just a rumor, so we'll have to see if there's anything that isn't true. But Victor Cruz is actually hosting a Pros versus Joes revival of the Challenge Champs versus 10 former professional athletes. We don't know anyone from the champ side. I guess maybe they're announcing that at the reunion in a couple weeks.
But we have the list of champs I can run through. I don't know some of these people, so I'll probably mispronounce some of their names.
Good, because I don't know any of them. Okay, you so, picked probably the best person to bring on for the season 30 cast, probably the worst person to bring on to just read 10 athletes' names back. So, you could have read gibberish, and I would have said, oh, yeah, I remember them.
So we have Tia Blanco, a professional surfer. We have Louis Hazel, an Olympian. Lindsay Jacobellis, a professional snowboarder. Lolo Jones, Olympic hurdler. Candace Wiggins, a former WNBA athlete. Gus Kenworthy, a professional skier. Sean Merriman, a retired NFL linebacker. CM Punk, a former WWE wrestler and sort of former UFC fighter. Louis Vito, a professional snowboarder. And Cameron Wilbley, a retired NFL linebacker.
And do we have any sort of sense as to what the format is this going to actually be like a let's send in one pro and one challenge champion into an elimination?
I think that's what I read, is that there'll be like a challenge each week, and whichever side wins, like they get to vote in the losing, they get to vote in someone from their own team, and they vote in someone from the losing team, and then they compete against each other in like an elimination. I think I could have easily misread that, but I think that's what it is. It's a 6-week event. It's all for charity, which kind of sucks for like the champs, because I mean they're not, you know, made of money. I think they probably could use some of that money. So it's kind of a weird move to have them playing for charity. Like I wouldn't want to be competing, like me personally, I would want to win the money for myself. like I can kind of use that money. I feel like that's how true. They would feel also.
But that being said, I mean I feel like this probably takes place on the US mainland. I'm assuming that they're not flying them off to Liechtenstein or something to film this 6-week season. So at least, you know, they're not traveling too much. Maybe they can sort of like, especially if I'm assuming they're filming it in California. So if they need to like step out and do something, they'll be able to do that. And I mean, I'm sure the appearance fees are definitely up there. I think you mentioned, you know, bringing back Derek and Veronica is great. I actually heard from behind the scenes stuff that maybe one of the reasons why they haven't brought back until recently these old school challengers is that I think there's a threshold where like if you appear on a certain number of seasons, then they have to pay you a lot more. And that's one reason why the challenge just doesn't ask back recurring people and sometimes decides like,
right,
hey, you know what? Let's give Hunter another chance of being on the show because it's only his second time. But if that's the case, then these people are hopefully getting well reimbursed for their time on the challenge side.
So, I mean, it's a pretty interesting idea, the fact that, you know, you don't know, but there are some pretty fairly big names. Like CM Punk was a huge WWE star. I mean, Sean Merriman was like a Pro Bowl NFL player. Lolo Jones is a pretty well-known Olympian. So there are some like not like F-level celebrities on that are willing to do this. So it is an interesting concept. We'll have to see. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. It'll start the week after the challenge finale, 6 weeks. So
God,
it should be fun.
Dude, does MTV want you to sleep, Brian? Poor Ali Lasher. I told her. I messaged her being like, hey, did you know that this show is coming out? And she's like, ha, ha, ha. I think I don't want to speak on behalf of Ali Lasher, but I think MTV has broken her at this point with all the content they're throwing out.
Yeah, I mean, there's like they're going to have spinoffs of spinoffs now with all the MTV shows they have. Like, just when you think, are you the ones done? Boom, second chances. Just when you challenge them, boom, champs versus pros. So, well, we'll see. It could be a fun little 6-week adventure. So
as long as it's a little 6-week adventure, and I think that the format pretty much guaranteed for us to see an elimination every week. So I think it'll be a nice little like taste of sherbet between courses, because if season 30 is filming now, they're probably aiming for what, like a late summer, early fall airtime.
I don't know. So sometimes they're weird. Sometimes they're able to like turn these out in a few months, and sometimes they wait like 6 or 7 months. So if I had to guess, I would say around like October would probably be a good time, but I don't know if they're, what the deal is with Are You the One, if that's in filming, and if they, although they don't seem to give a crap if they are them at the same time. So
because Are You the One is usually like a summer show, but it came back in the winter this year. So that sort of threw everything off.
Yeah. So we'll have to see when, I mean, the challenge usually films is about like 6 or 7 weeks. So it'll probably be done filming. That's like middle of June-ish. So I would say probably around October would maybe be season 30.
All right. Spooky Halloween season 30 coming your way.
So, and then second chances you want to discuss. So for everyone listening, we're recording this after this past Wednesday's episode. So if you haven't listened to that, maybe don't listen to this yet. But that's where everyone up to. I'm all caught up. You're all caught up, right?
I'm one episode behind, but I know what happens. So okay. I know it was, spoiler alert, again, hop out if you don't want to hear about this. I heard it was a non-elimination episode, so yes, I'll have to catch up on that.
It was. Classic MTV style of a non-elimination.
I know. Just when you thought, when I really built up the Are You the One format of like, okay, there's a set structure to every episode, now they do this. But oh my gosh, I want to gush about this show so much. This is really what lowered expectations can bring to you, Brian. Going into the Second Chances thing, as high as it was on the All Are You the One 5 finale, I'm like, I don't know exactly what this is. This is clearly Are You the One trying to do a cheap knockoff of the challenge? Why are they in teams of two? What exactly are they doing? But first I'll say that like the casting is great, aside from, you know, boring couple Cameron and Michaela, but it's also kind of in the Schadenfreude aspect, kind of enjoyable to realize that their relationship is going to fall apart and break up after the show. That's really cruel of me to say. No, I apologize about that.
It's the bizarro Laurel Nicole, where the challenge you get to see a relationship form and you gotta have the opposite reaction. So, Are You the One? You have to watch a relationship crumble. It's only fair.
So, we should probably set this up for those that decide to stick around but haven't seen the show before, exactly how this works. So, Are You the One? Second Chances took 10 perfect matches from the previous 5 seasons and brought them down to Australia. And essentially how each episode works is that they compete in tasks. It's almost like an Amazing Race format in that they're competing in teams of two to do a challenge. And you have a pair bank account. And like, if you finish first in a challenge, you get like a 20K added to your bank account. Second place gets 10K. Third place gets 5K. If you finish in last, you're up for elimination. But then what happens is everyone else, sort of like in a truth booth style, votes for one other team aside from the one that came in first to enter the choice. And if you know Friend or Foe, or if you know the end of Bachelor Pad season 3, it's essentially what that is. They take that the team that's chosen for the choice takes their bank account money and they can choose to either share or steal. If they both choose share, they move on in the competition and the team that came in last was eliminated. If they both pick steal, they go home. So the team in last stays and they each get nothing. If one picks share and one picks steal, then that person who picks steal takes the entire and they're eliminated from the game. So it's a hybrid of a bunch of different reality shows together, but I'm having a lot of fun with it personally.
Yeah, I think it is a lot of fun. I think the challenges themselves are actually kind of creative in that they're different style, and that some of them are like pretty athletic. There was like a huge like race like 1 or 2 weeks ago. This week you'll see they have to make like a movie, super weird. Other weeks they're like they do like a scavenger hunt. So it's kind of Amazing Race esque. I would say I mean I don't watch Amazing Race, but I imagine that's kind of like not to the degree of what they're doing there, but that's sort of similar to the type of stuff they're doing there. So it's kind of like testing their trust with each other. And then, of course, they're in the house and they're doing their classic MTV, getting drunk, hooking up, and going to the boomer room type stuff. And then, I mean, there's a little bit of a strategy. There's not a whole lot of strategy, I would say, in just in terms of like who determines the vote for who. Is not that much to it. But for a fun like concept, I mean, the last 10 minutes of it are always super enjoyable with the choice. So I would recommend it.
Absolutely. I would say check it out if you have like a few spare hours. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, my favorite task so far, I haven't seen the movie one, but as you mentioned before, Brian, it was they pulled 5 random Australian citizens and asked them what they liked. They let the teams loose in a flea market to try to buy the best gift for each individual.
That would be my hell too. I get so stressed out shopping, especially when I don't know exactly what I want. So I would 100% be like, some of them were going absolutely nuts. I would be with them. I hate shopping in public.
Yeah. So they essentially had to like submit to like a blind taste test and the people picked what their favorite gifts were. But again, it's super creative. Admittedly, and this might be a little hypocritical, but I'm not someone who particularly watches a show like The Challenge for the big physical competitions or the extreme stunts that they do falling into the water from 60 feet up. So to have these creative challenges, it's very Amazing Race-esque. Like you said, the only thing that sticks out like a sore thumb, I appreciate MTV giving Karamo Brown, you know, hey, you're an alum of the real world and The Challenge. I know you're an actor and a host. Let's bring you in to host. Ryan, the host of Are You the One, never looked better in comparison to this guy. He's so scripted, it's painful to watch.
He's literally a, if you watch each, like the choice for him explaining the rules, he is literally a robot where he says the same yeah. exact words with the same tone, the same motions, the same everything every single week. He's actually super impressive that he can replicate it like that well every week.
But yeah, so he's like, you've entered the choice. Yeah. Here's how the choice. It feels like I'm entering a spaceship, essentially. That's how what Karamo should go into next. So, you know, Karamo aside, the format is really interesting. The cast, as we mentioned, is super fun. Devin and Rashida are a riot. Morgan Devin's and Tori are great. Devin's a star. Adam and Shanley. I mean, yeah, as I said before, it's for me, it's Devin, Shanley, Tori, and Rashida as well. Alicia's become a little bit of a villain. We did get to see, at this point, we did get to see Asaf compete. Gio got a nice old yeah. slice of humble pie, which again, from a Sean yes. and Poyta perspective, was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. So I think they're 6 weeks in. So just as we mentioned, this is like the perfect time to binge watch it and disappear for a month later and then binge watch it to the finale. So you'll have a yes. good taste to do it that way. But yeah, I think, I mean, you'll get, especially for some of the people coming on, if you aren't an Are You the One fan, you'll get a taste of Alicia. You'll get a reintroduction to Devin. So, and you'll get to see Tori. So I think it's a pretty good precursor to challenge. I don't know if they'll bring it back again, but for at least a one-off, it was I'm having a great time watching it.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to have, at least until, you know, Are You the One 6 comes around, they probably have like 12 couples in the house mm-hmm. just to continue to screw them over.
If so many other shows to populate, they have to keep coming up with yeah, new exactly. shows.
Because I do think that they picked 10 of the most entertaining and noteworthy teams on Are You the One, with maybe a couple of exceptions, but I mean, you sort of have to wonder if they did one right after this one, who exactly they could pick from. So who knows? They might be able to do it, but you would hope that at least after another Are You the One season, they would be able to do it. This could be a flash in the pan thing, but for what it is, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. So I think we've covered a lot, but I think that's all the MTV shows that are on or may air or going to air in the future.
Or do you want to talk straight in with the million? Well, Stranded with $1 million for one quick second. I do want to bring up going back to the challenge season 30, because wasn't the rumor for a while, hey, vote for this person yes. to come onto yeah, the challenge cast?
With that? Why isn't that, they're not going to have enough votes? They'd be like, all right,
I don't know. Yeah, the rumor was for a while, though, that I think they said like, oh, Cody's going to be on because Cody has been all over social media talking about, I want to get on the challenge. Then for a while, they said Makani was going to be on, but I don't think either one of them are on the final cast list. So maybe they've been shelved. Maybe they'll show up in the Champs versus Pros thing.
Maybe.
Oh, you know, what would Cody would try to like poop in the Pros locker right. room to try to like rattle them.
That would be unbelievable. So I think that is your full MTV dose from everything that's going on. And who better to give it than Mike Bloom?
Oh boy, yes. I have a lot of reality TV vested interests, if my podcasting career is any indication. So I'm happy we got to see kind of a microcosm of that and talking about five different shows in less than half an hour.
So this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on. Tell what are all the other shows you are currently talking about?
Oh God, you have another hour and a half. No, I'll keep it quick. From a wrap ups perspective, the main thing that I cover is RuPaul's Drag Race with Bren Wolgamott and Liana Boris. That's been a lot of fun. We're entering the Snatch Game, which is sort of like the RuPaul's Drag Race merge, if you will, a big milestone in the season, and it's always a lot of fun. I also appeared on the Amazing Race podcast this past week to talk about the double episode of what Rob Pastorino and I are both saying is a very fun season, so check that out. I do a little bit of scripted TV coverage as well on the Jay and Jack network of Lost podcasting fame. I covered the third seasons of The Leftovers and Fargo there, so you can check that out. I do SNL recaps on Post Show Recaps every month, and I also do movie coverage with AJ Mass on The Hamster Factor, where he sees a movie, he shows me a movie that he has seen, but I haven't, and we get my own hot takes there. So yeah, a lot of irons in the fire, but I'm so happy to be podcasting, and I'm even happier to be able to talk with you about the challenge. Again, not the most exciting episode, but there are so many things, exciting things going on with both these characters and obviously in the world of MTV that I think we definitely filled up the airtime.
Yes, exactly. And they can follow you at a Mike Bloom type, which actually might be my favorite Twitter name for anyone in the RHAP world. It's a great one.
Oh, stop.
You can follow me at @ColinBryan_. Check back in 2 weeks, as I mentioned, when we will put a bow on the Challenge Evasion covering the finale and the reunion. Until then, have a good one.